taking their responsibilities seriously. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you, Barry, despite the technical issues that we're having.
Well, that's all right. We're not having too many technical issues. I mean, we're both still alive and healthy, and as it goes, most of our listeners are hearing us fairly clearly. So I think we're doing all right.
You sound pretty good on this end. Hopefully I sound pretty good on that.
I think we all sound pretty good. Now, speaking of doing all right, I opened with saying taking your responsibilities seriously. And I think that's something that we try to do here at the Institute for Principled Policy, is taking our responsibilities to raise a banner and encourage our elected officials to govern according to biblical truth and to the plain meaning of the Constitution of the United States. Well, Chuck, although we really focus on Ohio more than anything else, it seems like this idea of taking your responsibility seriously is really starting to take hold in certain parts of the country, specifically around the issue of the Second Amendment. Now, as we've talked in depth on this program before about the attacks on our Second Amendment freedoms, from such things as outright gun bans to restrictions upon the types of firearms a person can personally own to the equipment that can be that you can legally have to go along with them, we see constantly a barrage from elected officials against those fundamental rights. And I believe that the Second Amendment I would consider a fundamental right, because it is a way to protect your life, preserve your liberty, and not so much necessarily just to pursue your happiness, but, you know, sometimes criminals will use it to pursue what they consider to be happiness.
Well, it depends. For instance, it depends on what your happiness is. Now, I'm really hard-pressed to see how anybody living in a gun-free zone could be happy, because let's take a look at one of them. One citywide gun-free zone would be Chicago.
Yes.
And it's got one of the worst gun violence records in the United States of America. Another one of those would be Washington, D.C. And ditto.
It seems like the two primary major cities in the country, which have outright banned the legal ownership of firearms, have the highest gun crime rates in the country. That becomes as no surprise, because when you take the ability to defend yourself out of the hands of law-abiding citizens, criminals are not going to sit there and the city ban me having a gun, so I guess I'm going to have to do my robbery with a blackjack.
Yeah. Except that doesn't work. Now, in England, they have basically, since the massacre in Scotland about 10 or 12 years ago, they've essentially banned handguns. Has it really lowered gun deaths in England? And the answer is no, it hasn't. It's harder to use one, but the fact is that they have serious violent crime there. It now involves knives and beatings and all kinds of things. It just goes to show you that people will do what people will do, and they will use any weapon at hand. The only difference is it's very difficult to get a hold of a gun, and so therefore they use something else. And the same can be said for Mexico. Down there for years, the leading cause of death, since guns are banned in Mexico, because, you know, people who are armed tend to hold revolutions when governments get oppressive, and in order for Mexico to maintain their oppressive government, they've had to make sure that the public was disarmed. So what's the leading cause of death down there by violent crime? It's knives.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So you find that all over the place, Barry. If you ban guns, the murder rate doesn't necessarily drop, but the violent crime rate at least stays the same or goes up. So the statistics are skewed. This is what people are counting on. Liberals count on everybody looking at it and said, oh, it's gun deaths. And some of them are skewing gun deaths. For instance, Piers Morgan, who we've talked about several times on this show, has been throwing around some phony crime statistics, which even the British government basically admits are bogus, because they don't statistically count crimes the way we do here. So it's an apples and oranges comparison. And the fact is, the gun death rate per capita lower there? Yes. Is it higher here? Yes. But it's higher in other places than it is here, precisely because people aren't armed. One of the lowest gun death rates per capita is in Switzerland, and everybody has a gun in Switzerland. So the mere ownership of guns has nothing to do with the violent crime rate. It has to do with number of cultural factors. And let's face it, Barry, in this country, we're in severe cultural decline.
Yes, we are.
We have an entertainment industry that glorifies violence through movies, television, video games, all kinds of different things. Well, let's face it. What's our most popular sport? Probably football.
Right.
We now see guys who are killing themselves over multiple head injuries they've received playing football. The brain damage that they've gotten, and these guys that are dying. Our football players tend to die young, and they die exceedingly damaged. And by that I mean they're crippled, and some of them have severe brain issues because you go into a football stadium and you bang heads together with 350-pound men, somebody's going to get hurt.
That's true.
You can't avoid it.
So there are many ways to get to those problems.
Way many.
But the big problem that we're dealing with right now, Chuck, is we have a leadership culture in this country, in this society, that believes that it's all the fault of the gun, that the tool is actually the suspect. And so therefore, if we just take away the tool, everything will be all right. But you've already said there are many other ways of getting to those problems without the tool. But in one state specifically, they've been moving to do something, Chuck, that I believe that many other states are probably going to before it's all over with. When we finally get enough egregious, tyrannical dictates from the executive branch and from our Congress acting as a supine toady to that executive branch, we are going to see states doing what this state, Wyoming, is doing, and that is reasserting their rights under the Constitution. Now, Wyoming has been known because they were one of the first states to pass what's called the Firearms Freedom Act, Chuck, and that was basically that they put law in place that said that if a gun is wholly manufactured within the state boundaries of the state of Wyoming, and you've got gun companies who work out of Wyoming, and then if it's kept in the state of Wyoming, then no federal laws related to that gun apply. And that's a very interesting thing. Now, again, they passed it, and of course, I think it's being challenged in court. But Wyoming's not waiting to hear what the courts tell them they can and can't do, because I think there's some legislators in Wyoming who can read and understand the Constitution fairly plainly. They don't need a black robe Solon of the courts to dictate to them how they should read the Constitution. And so they've introduced a new bill this session in 2013, House Bill 104. Now, House Bill 104, as again I said, their earlier measure was called the Firearms Freedom Act. This one is called the Firearm Protection Act, Chuck. And what it is basically a law that says if you pass a federal law which attempts to ban semi-automatic firearms or limiting the size of magazines or any other limitations on firearms within the state of Wyoming, you can't enforce it. And if you try to enforce it, we will find your federal agents in violation of Wyoming law, and we will find them and put them in jail.
Well, good for them. That is exactly how the Constitution designed it to work. A lot of people will say state officers are required to take an oath not only to the United States Constitution, but to the state Constitution. Well, what happens when those two things become diametrically opposed? What if upholding the United States? Well, actually, take it back. Where I was going to go with that, it doesn't work. If you're upholding the United States Constitution, it doesn't interfere with the state Constitution at all.
No, it should not. If you're upholding the U.S. Constitution in its specific intent and its enumerated powers of Congress, it shouldn't interfere with it in any way, shape, or form.
And that's exactly the point of the Wyoming governor, who basically says in this article, if you look down near the bottom, he talks about where he's asked if he's going to sign it or not. And of course, what's interesting about this is that the Wyoming governor is prohibited by law from threatening to veto legislation. I find that an extremely interesting facet of Wyoming law. I wish we had it here.
Yes, that keeps the executive branch from trying to use undue influence on the legislative branch ahead of time, or trying to cajole or convince legislators to change the bill or gut it in order to get him to okay it. I think that's good, because honestly, let them pass what they feel is right to pass, and if he really honestly doesn't feel like it's the right thing, he has a veto pen. And that's great, but then they have the ability to override the veto. But If you get one where the governor makes a threat and then the legislative leaders capitulate and they say, well, we're not going to bring the bill up because the governor is going to veto it, then the only people who really lose, Chuck, is the public. It's the constituents under that form of government.
And how many times have we seen that in Ohio government?
A few. We've seen that a few times. But thankfully, you've got, I believe it's 8 state representatives and 2 state senators from the state of Wyoming who have put this bill forward. So it's a bill that's been put forward in both their chambers. And it would basically say that if a federal agent tries to enforce any kind of federal gun law, gun ban law, within the boundary of the state of Wyoming, that the Wyoming will imprison that agent for at least a year, up to 5 years, and fine them a maximum of $5,000. So basically they're saying, you can't tell us how to operate in the state. This is an area of our freedom. So we are going to say forget you, which means they're trying to set up a constitutional crisis, Charles. They're trying to say it is our duty as the elected representatives of the people of the state of Wyoming to interpose ourselves between them and their lawful right to own and possess firearms and the federal government's tyrannical imposition of draconian laws to take that right away from our people. So they are exercising the historic office of interposition in this, and I think it's great because he's basically saying, the lead sponsor, Representative Kendall Croker, it said, quote, I take an oath to uphold, support, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Wyoming. I believe it's my duty to take that oath seriously. If the federal government is going to pass laws taking back our rights, it's our right as a state to defend those rights. I wish we had statesmen like that in Ohio, and I think we do have some.
Yes,
it's just and we're going to talk about that on tomorrow's program, about how one of our statesmen is actually standing up and trying to do something.
But for right now, frankly, we need to look to states like Oklahoma and Wyoming, who are beginning to talk about nullification and other things that have not been talked about seriously in this country since the 1860s. The fact is, really, nullification has been used many, many, many times by the states, but it's not played up in the media very much. Basically, if you remember Real ID, well, the federal government passed legislation that said everybody's going to have to get this ID card, it's going to have to comport to federal law, all this personal information is going to have to be embedded in a chip in the thing. And basically, a bunch of state legislatures said, well, you can pass all the laws you want, but we're not doing that here. Wyoming, I believe, was one of them. I believe Idaho was one of them. I believe Montana was one of them. Colorado may have done it, too. Ohio, again, skirted the edge of it, but couldn't bring itself to quite do it. And in fact, I'm hearing that we're getting a new IDs once again in Ohio that are going to have some of the features of the Real ID card. But the fact is that Real ID died on the vine because the state said, no, thank you. We're not doing it. That's what needs to happen here. I love the thing in Wyoming and Montana where legislators basically came up with that thing you talked about earlier in the show. If all the parts are manufactured here, the guns are manufactured here in this state, that nothing is brought in by interstate commerce, then in fact it's all protected by state law. There is no federal regulation that applies. Now, we know how the federal government would try to get around that, but if those states stick to their guns and say no, and more states join it, you may see those laws falling by the wayside as things like Real ID have. Barry, that remains to be seen.
Yes.
And the fact is, it remains to be seen on whether we can get legislation like that in Columbus. Now, frankly, I have my doubts considering our current governor and a number of the so-called conservatives in the Ohio legislature who really aren't conservatives at all, are really all looking forward to serving their time in the United States Congress, and therefore are looking to suck up to that body as much as possible so that they can get party nominations and the like. That's what we're dealing with. And we need to have people in Ohio who have the guts, and as we said, we're going to talk about some of them that do. It just depends on how much reaction can get ginned up, how many of those people we have in the Ohio legislature, and that remains to be seen.
I think it is. It's an interesting test of just how serious many of our elected officials, including our freshmen, newly elected freshmen, along with some of our more veteran members who say that they're very conservative and vote on conservative pieces of legislation, Chuck. But I would say that this goes beyond conservative. This goes to constitutional forms of legislation, and I want to see how many of our elected officials really want to stand up and be constitutionalists.
With that, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.